Society is the devil's playground.
Devil, take home.
Do a completely a cappella version of this song.
All of us pick a part.
And Haley just comes in.
Double ping pong.
That would Someone be told me funny. That we haven't explained what our name is yet.
Wait, have we not?
Have we not?
I thought we have.
Well, let's start.
I thought so,
let's start
but we haven't, apparently.
Let's explain.
All right. By the way, we started.
Hey, this is Double Ping Pong.
There you go, Rob.
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
It's been
a bit. Easy to explain. Why is it double ping pong? Double, two couples. Ping pong is a conversation that goes back and forth.
You're saying this so confidently like it makes sense, but that's not why we called it double ping pong initially.
It's why it worked.
Yeah.
Yes, but that's
why
not
it worked.
That's not where it came from.
That clip in Double Ping Pong's intro is actually a clip of Marie and I way back in like 7th, 8th grade. And it was a joke, an ongoing joke.
They were still in diapers.
Since middle school. And so it sued us.
Wasn't that like something you guys just said when it was like.
No.
Or it's just something
It was
Rob
a game
did.
We played. What was the game, Marie?
It was the whisper challenge.
No, I know that, but I'm saying after the whisper challenge finished, I feel like it just became like if something, if there was awkward silence or something, it was just like double ping pong.
Or like bring on the steam croutons.
Hello, I would like to meet you if you would give me your fish.
He never said that one.
That one's probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, well, in their footnotes in the podcast, we'll put the link to that original video and you can watch it.
And then good luck sitting through that.
Yeah.
I don't claim having done the audio on that, so sorry about the really loud children screaming when they get things done the right way. Then there's like cheering and it's like, and it's like way too loud.
Who edited that?
Rob.
It was I.
Oh, it was
I was trying to not take the, like not Got say it was you. Me, but it was definitely
it
me.
It was you.
In the early days.
I don't know what to do with my hand.
I think that's correct.
I feel like if we had a YouTube video while we're recording this podcast, some of this laughter would make more sense than
well,
it does. But
people get over it.
Jeremy was just grabbing his moob.
Listeners didn't need to know. But
well, you're doing it still. You're holding
now
your
I'm holding
chest.
Both.
We're squished on a couch for everyone who's wondering.
I have a computer to one side and we don't have a soundboard. We're all sharing a mic.
All of us are on one microphone.
The heat doesn't work. It's raining.
No, we have two mics. But the couples are very close.
We've had to share.
It's nice.
It's okay.
Anyway.
Sorry.
Guys, thanks
one
for
wife
listening.
Said it's nice. One wife said it's okay. But you didn't mean it in the sense of being close to me. But the timing of it was, it's nice. It's okay.
I'm a little uncomfortable. I
sleep next to this big lug.
Oh, stop.
Anyway.
Jeremy's voice is also going away.
Yeah. Guys, I threw up.
Nope.
I got the stomach bug. One, I haven't thrown up in a long time. Haley's never heard me throw up. I don't quite have the technique down. All right.
I already told Marie about
More noise comes out than vomit. And it sounds like a dying cat. And I am still facing the repercussion of my bad vomit technique.
I think the funniest thing was for me, I didn't say anything about it. Eloise and I were in the bedroom and she goes, Mommy, what's wrong with Daddy? I was like, that's Daddy? And then I realized he was throwing up and I just lost it. And I felt bad because I'm like, here I am supposed to sympathize
Should
for my puking husband. But I couldn't help but laugh. And Eloise was like, Mommy, why are you laughing? I was like, because it sounds weird.
Oh, man.
And then I didn't
awful.
Say anything afterwards because I just felt like uncomfortable. So then when you said, this is crazy because this was the first time in our marriage I've ever heard him throw up.
ever.
That's so weird to me.
Which is wild because it shocked me.
No, no, you like, have heard me throw up.
I'm not like
but
that.
But you were throwing up at the same time, so you didn't care. This is when we got food poisoning.
Was this from the honeymoon?
Uncle. No, this is the aunt and uncle.
Oh. Yeah, anyways.
You were just throwing up at the same time, so.
He broke the ice, and he talked about how horrible he sounded, and then all walls broke.
It sounded like a dying cat.
And I just felt it's free range, like if open you, season. If you, I can make fun of my husband now.
If you picture what picking a cat up by the tail and swinging that thing. Like, I can't
that
even.
So uncomfortable. It Jeremy. Was.
And I still don't have a voice. And I'm sitting there leaning over the toilet, like, open your diaphragm, you idiot. Come on.
Because he took vocal lessons, so you knew what you had to do to get the sound.
Why are you closing up? It's like I was ready to throw up, but something on the inside was like still keeping shut. I don't know. It was awful.
SpongeBob voice in there.
That technique.
Was it that high pitch?
Yes. That's why I didn't know it was him. I was like, what is happening?
It was awful.
Is Levi in the dishwasher again?
I think, yeah, it was awful. Either way, I still don't have it. That was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, can you please next time?
Next time, I will.
I'll let you know next time.
At least invite us over when he's sick next time.
Next time.
So we can see
I just
back.
Don't. Yeah, and I still don't have a good voice. Mm. So I didn't do the Behind the Sermon podcast this week. Mm. Because I did want to have
the voice.
Is that
why you didn't sing on Easter?
That's why I didn't sing on Easter. I had nothing to give. I was in the MD mic being like, go again. Like trying to get something out. Like, hey, all right, everyone. and that's what happened. It was fine. It was fun. I was playing guitar still, so it was nice. But either way, suffer with this voice, everyone. Suffer with it. It's fine.
So it's been a bit since we've recorded. It is now, like, I think we just kind of referenced, it's past Easter. This is the Tuesday right after Easter. And we haven't recorded in, what, four, maybe a month?
I think it's been about a month.
Yeah, it's not longer than that, at least for us. I know you guys have recorded separately.
So I believe we know that a lot of stuff has kind of gone on for the month. So that's kind of why we weren't recording.
Yeah.
Did you guys want to let people know what's going on, what happened, and then maybe how you guys are doing? Cause we're all
one thing at a time.
Yeah, sure. I agree.
Yeah, for sure. So we had, we've been joking about it too in the podcast episodes, not joking about it, but talking about it excitedly that, Haley and I were expecting our third baby. And so she'd had an appointment on a Friday.
Yep.
Had an appointment on a Friday and we went in, she went in for that appointment. And we had discovered that the heartbeat had stopped. So then we were far enough along to where we got admitted into the hospital and we kind of had to go, really, I say we. I think Haley had to go through a lot. I was there for her, but had to go through the process of now delivering our stillborn that the heart stopped. And so it's been a rough season now, just working through everything. I think we felt every range of emotion that you can feel.
I think we're still feeling a lot of things.
We're still feeling a lot of things. And, but one of the things that our pastor, Nate, had talked about is like, because they've gone through some terrible things too and some rough stuff too. If they had even suggested like, don't just go through the motions, go through the right motions, do the things that you should do. Don't just let life start passing you by. And so even doing an episode like this, like maybe we're not ready to just sit and talk about like, let's have a great Christian family and talk about being in ministry and all those things. But I think it's a step for us to go through the right motions. Yeah. This was something that we wanted to do and wanted to be a part of. And so getting back into that, mm-hmm. That's kind of why we're recording again. It's not like, all right, we're through it. We're ready to help the next person going through this to figure it out. Like, we're really not ready to be authorities on how to walk through this. I think we have done plenty of things wrong. And
I think we just want to be honest and open with our friends, our family, and people that are listening to this as to where we're at currently. And just things we walk through in the beginning of everything. Even to the just changes this week, I've noticed in myself mentally and spiritually, as we're grieving the loss of our daughter, Hope, and grieving, I think, a lot of the aspects of my faith in ways, because I feel like there was a lot of issues in my own heart and my mind that I thought were very solidified. But I have wrestled a lot with my anger, with my questions. But I'm trying not to lose my faith in it all, because I think I know I'm going to get emotional. I think in the grand scheme of things, we are discovering a different type of faith in our God that is going to be bigger and stronger than it was before. It's hard to say that, mostly because I'm searching for a lot of the aspects of God that I feel like I'm lacking right now. And I think a lot of that is the consistent peace and the joy I had before. And I think the joy is going to come at some point. And I know that there's points in my days that I can really correct my mindset and find joy in the little things. But it's a struggle. I'm not going to lie about it. It's a struggle. And so I think that's part of what we wanted to kind of talk about is, I guess, in the sense when we deal with life struggles, usually it's with, you know, people. It's with your friends. It's with your families. It's with strangers even. And you hold an anger or resentment towards people, and you have to learn how to go through those things when people let you down. But I think a bigger part of this for me is not really dealing with a physical human, but dealing with our God and how I've been navigating my emotions spiritually, mentally, with God through this. And when God lets you down, what do you do? Like, how do you handle it? And yeah, I think that's where I'm at right now, is finding ways to handle this that is still holding on to my faith in God through this, because I think a lot of what I had before was just a very uninterrupted, innocent viewpoint of God and life, and then it's been interrupted big time. And I feel like I'm discovering more of our God, our sovereign God, and a God who still loves me and cares for us and cares for Hope and loves Hope, but a God that does allow hardships to happen and navigating through those emotions.
Yeah, I don't know how much we just want to talk. I don't want to not have you guys a part of the podcast either.
No, I don't want to interrupt. I mean, guys share what you want to share.
Yeah, no, I think so. The timeline for us and why this was a rougher experience for us, I think, you know, we heard the no heartbeat, and we had been growing in a faith, and we still have this faith, so I'm not trying to make it sound like we've just lost all faith in miracles and lost all faith in other things. I don't think we're quite there, but we went into this wanting to have a really strong faith. I think you may have been a little more hesitant about having the faith, but I know from Friday to Monday, was some of the hardest time of prayer that I had ever had in my life. Asking the church to pray. I remember just, I'm not the type, worship nights where even when you feel God's presence, like I'm not the type to go to my knees and worship in that. I think there's just still an aspect that I experience him in those times, but I remember just Haley being laying down in the bedroom and me on the phone with Pastor Nate, just kneeling in the kitchen, just couldn't stand, praying and holding my hands towards the bedroom and wanting to believe that there's a miracle coming, right? For me, started working through what kind of testimonies does this leave behind? How will this impact everyone? Started getting a real anticipation for it, being like, God, this is going to be the Easter of all Easters when this works out. And that's really how I was like, when this works out, we're going to celebrate, this idea and work through it, and kept praying. And I think one of the things that, and it's still a faith, it's a faith that I'm not ashamed in, but after the fact felt silly. Like I think it was, because we went in on Monday, I think.
Yeah, we were.
Monday evening.
Yeah, we were given the weekend to kind of talk through our options. And yep. We had originally planned to like go in for an induction on Sunday. And I just had no peace about that decision. I was wrestling with the idea that they were wrong, that it wasn't true. But at the same time, you only know if you experience it, but there was like no life in our ultrasound when we went in. So I had this like hope, but very small hope. And then I was like, okay, God, like prove yourself to me that you can do the miracles that you've talked about and that you've shared and you've shown people like that you've done these things, and like, it wasn't even like I was praying just for myself. I was praying to see like transformation of our doctors in that room, of people giving their lives to you because they've witnessed a miracle. Like, and I had that hope with you and with our friends and with you guys and with family and the church. Everyone was praying for us, over that weekend. And then I said, let's give it until Monday. And let's go in and just let's get another ultrasound. Like, let's be sure that this is it. Like, and let's see a miracle happen,
Yeah.
So we did. And
yeah. So I remember, I think it was Monday. I went to grab breakfast and I had recorded a video because I wanted to have an undeniable faith that God was going to move. And so I filmed a video that was like, one of the things that always frustrates me when people are pregnant, you find out the gender, is everyone waits until you say the gender for them to say, oh, I knew it. That's what I thought you were having. And I remember filming a video that said, I'm on the hard side of the miracle we're praying for. And I want to say before we see anything that I knew it. I want to know for myself that I knew it. And it's not like I was surprised that God moved, And, after the fact, it felt a little silly, but I think that faith was still something that is good to have. And so we went in Monday night. We made dang sure to get another ultrasound. And just still confirmed no heartbeat and no movement. And so moved forward with everything. The hospital was amazing, was insanely caring. We have heard from other people who went through it a long time ago that they made it feel like you were going in to have an abortion. You were in a basement. You were in just an awful place. So not only are you going through the trauma of what you should never have to walk through, but you're in this awful facility, and the hospital that we were at was not at all like that. They had a respect for life. They had a respect for how we were processing. And I think that was really helpful for us. 100%. And just made us feel a little less crazy, because you do feel a little crazy when you're going through it. Like,
I don't think you feel crazy at all. I think you are processing so much in such a short period of time that, like, you don't even know what to do in those moments. Like, to have to go through the shock of it all, to then make decisions, to literally, like, figuring out, like, cremation, burial op, like, funeral arrangements. Like, you have to go through all of these emotions.
Yeah, in, like, and, 2 days.
I just didn't, like, you don't prepare for those things. Like, I think you forget sometimes that, like, even halfway through a pregnancy, like there's so much God has already crafted in your womb. And, like, even since, you know, as early as, like, a heartbeat to then, like, there is so much life that is created in a womb. And the miracle of life is just evidence that there is a God that is orchestrating it all. And I think one thing I keep going back on is that we didn't have, like, believers in our room. Like, they don't believe in God. Like, they weren't Christians. But the one thing I found just so interesting is that they kept saying, like, this isn't supposed to happen, you know, and this isn't fair. This isn't supposed to happen. And yet, like, you can't deny that in our hearts that we know God has created life. Like, he has created a place since the beginning of creation. And I keep going back to this. It's like, he's created life and he wants life. Mm-hmm. And yet we have had sin that has infiltrated this world. And yet people don't make that connection. Whether, like, when you don't believe in God, they don't understand, but they do know in their core, like, that God creates life and he breathes life. And that's what this creation was intended for. And I think that has helped me kind of see it in a bigger place, is that, like, whether you believe in him or not, like, God is crafted in all human beings, and he has created this, you know, just humankind to appreciate and value the life that he's made. And I think that's helped me kind of see God in a bigger perspective, and just zooming out on some things about my life is just seeing how he has just crafted creation, and not essentially throwing the blame on him for it. Because I think I was stuck there for a while, and I was questioning so much and trying to understand, like, why he does allow things to happen to people, and yet he does perform miracles in others. And you have to really humble yourself to accept that sometimes you won't ever know those answers. And to have the courage to accept that takes a lot, because you can find yourself drowning searching for those answers. And you can find yourself in such a depressed place, because I had been there for, like, a while, until I was crawling out of it, and I'm still crawling out of it. But I can say that, like, it is so much harder to do this without God than to try and, I at least have a God I can be angry with, you know, and I can tell him that, and I can tell him that I don't understand how he works, and I don't understand all of the intricacies in this world that he's created. But I have a relationship where I can talk to him about that, because that's what it is, right? Like, when you're in a relationship, you have to find places in your relationship where you can be real and raw and honest with them. And for me, I'm having to figure out how to forgive my God. And it's, like, sounds petty, but, like, there's resentment in my heart that I've been holding on to that I have to find forgiveness to. And I can't just hold on to that anymore, because that's sin in my heart. And finding forgiveness in this situation isn't just towards God, because I can't blame him for this. He wanted hope and he wanted life, you know? But there are things that we just can't control, and that's what happened. Like, you go back to the beginning of creation, you go into Genesis and you read, and it's like, he was sad that
Adam and Eve turned their backs on God. Like, he was sad about it. And, you know, it helps me understand him in a different way, too, because you can easily throw the blame at him, and you can easily get angry and turn your faith and your back on him. But what does that do? You know, he doesn't, he's trying to, he's there. Like, he, and that's what's hard for me right now, is because I feel like once everything crumbles around you and you are really begging to find comfort, it feels like it gets silent, you know? And I think it's because you're dealing, when you're at your weakest moments and you're living in a really bad mental state, anxiety and fear and the enemy is just creeping in, and he is trying to make you more angry and more, and grow more resentment and bitterness. And he is doing everything he can to push you further and further away from diving into God. And it took me forever to actually want to like put on worship music and listen and pray and even open my Bible, because I felt like I wasn't getting anything out of it. And, you know, I had to take moments and stop and have him, Jeremy, pray for me and just, you know, be like just some strong foundation in our family at this point, because like, it's been really hard to just get back into the rhythm of that. I guess that's like part of obedience in your faith too. And that's hard, especially when you don't feel like any comfort or any peace is there. But sometimes peace is it comes in a different way. It's not just like that, you know, beautiful tranquility, like rest. It's sometimes it's just silence of sin and chaos in your mind. And like, that is something that I was dealing with for like 2 weeks after when we came home from the hospital. It's just this, I was waking up consistently every night from just nightmares of losing the kids. And I know a lot of that's from like trauma and from like, you're in a fight or flight mode, and you're in lack of control. So your body is not responding the way it should be. And I just consistently had these dreams that I was like, my kids were gone. They were being taken. It was horrible. And I woke up at one point where I told Jeremy, I said, I can't do this anymore. Like I can't live this life, and I can't live in this state. And, you know, we prayed, and it was the first time I felt God's presence in our room that night together when we prayed. Like, the first time I felt peace since we came home from the hospital was when I like prayed out loud. I said, God, this is your home. And I said, I need you here, you know, and silence the sin in my life, the lies in my head, you know, like, this is your home. And like, I had fallen asleep that night. I had no more nightmares. I haven't had any nightmares since then. And we've been praying every night since then. But I think taking that initial step, you know, and that purpose and that progress into healing and this is to make that action step and be like, okay, God, I know you're there. You know, I'm not going to block you out anymore. I'm going to actually pray to you. You know, it helps. And I think he's there, even though in the moments it sometimes feels like he's not. And he was there right when we started praying there, and like, he's been in our home since. Like, I feel like we haven't dealt with a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's like the whole idea of like, I don't know, like, you know that feeling of like when you have a pain and that goes away, and like how relieved you are once that pain goes away. For me, it felt like a little bit of the opposite. You grow numb. You don't grow numb, but you can start to grow unaware of the peace that God puts in your life. You can start to, you know, I think we can start to pretend it's just, oh, that's just us now. It's our personality. Like, and I think we had a sense of what's your life without God? Because we took some time of, it was hard to read scripture, it was hard to pray, and all of a sudden, everything was... Every side of us was being attacked. Yeah. Every side of us. Yeah. Our anxieties, our fears. We had fears of losing our children. I had fears of falling back into addiction, just fears welling up. And then you start to pray and it's like everything calms again. And you remember like that was the peace that we were sitting in for so long that we just got a taste of what life is like without God. And it was awful. It was horrifying.
I kept telling you, I'm like, I just have no peace in my life. Like, I'm like, I just want the same peace that I know I had when I delivered Hope.
Yeah.
And like, there was a peace in that hospital room when she was born. And I just knew, like, I knew, my spirit knew that she was in a better place, you know? And I sensed that, like, and I knew the only thing she knew was God and inside my womb. Like, she knew something so much more beautiful than what she could have been offered here. And I know she would have been so treasured here and she would have loved it here, but I know that in heaven she's got so much more there, and I'm just holding on to that. And but that peace I had there in the hospital, I just kept craving and wanting that back in the house. And I took some action steps for sure, and it took some releasing and some, you know, okay, God, like, I can't do this on my own anymore. I can't do this anymore by myself. And I think the biggest part of all of that was because I was just running from him. I was doing things on my own, and I'm still kind of working through, like, the complexity that comes into the eternal perspective and, like, just eternity in general. Mm. And I think those are those questions I've kind of come to conclusion that I have to allow to be unanswered, because it's things that we don't know, and we won't know until we die, really. And that's kind of where I've just been at, is just accepting that and like allowing me to think those things and just allow them to just be at where they're at and not try and dig so hard into it and question everything I've known to be true my whole life. And when you do that, like when you put your faith on the line, you know, like when you deal with a hardship, you have two options. You either run away from your faith or you run deeper into your faith. And I think when you're left in the place where you try and run away, you don't want to do that anymore. You don't want to keep running from it. You want to run towards God. And I think that's where we both had stopped, when we both realized that, like, enough is enough in this home. We've felt too much of the areas that are just not of God, and they're not of what he wants. And we had to quickly turn and get out of that.
Yeah.
Is it still hard? Heck yeah, every day is a challenge for me. And I think I had a faith for a while that was just, I know I've talked to you about this, Marie, and Jeremy and I have talked about it, but like, I think for a while my faith was really a faith where I don't want to say I believed it, but deep in my core and my soul, I think I did, is when you thought you had enough faith that anything would happen, you know, like God would make it work, and God, you know, he loves his children. You read it in scriptures. He loves the believers and people that call on his name. And like, you think that, okay, God, I've done everything. I've given my life to you. I've served you. I love to serve you. And I've done it with a heart of gratitude. And yet, like, you can't take away this pain from me. You know, I'm left thinking, okay, God, you're more of a genie. Like, in my head, I was like, he's more of a genie in a bottle at that point, because I'm just hoping for these things to happen, and I don't get what I want. So what am I left to do at that point? And that's where, you know, you can either run away or you'd run deeper. And I think I've come to conclusion with that this Easter and this past Sunday and stuff, where I've realized that he was a suffering savior. You know, he was the one that had given us everything already. And we need to learn to accept that that is the biggest gift he can give us, is eternity.
And we lose sight of eternity so fast on this side of the thing, of this side of the world, because we see things so temporary. We don't think of things long-term wise. And to believe him and see him as someone who had suffered for us and to save us from that, instead of a genie in the bottle, that can change your perspective dramatically. And I've realized that more in the past week, is that like I need to honor him because he's given me so much already, and I need to be grateful for the things he's given me, you know? And like, he gave me this life and he's given me this journey to walk and for us to go through this together. And we have to open up our hands and have him work and guide us through this. We can't do it alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And you guys had walked through it with us, like, quite a bit of the way. I just always wonder, like, when you're on another side of it, like, what was happening for you guys throughout hearing news and working through it? Like, were you just in, like nursing mode? Like, you just like, I don't know, I'm not thinking about my own emotion, we're just going to take care of our friends? Mm-hmm. Or like, what was the process for you guys too?
So for us, I think we were very, very quickly, when you called and said, this is what's going on, you had hope in your voice. Mm-hmm. And I latched onto that and I said, you're believing it, I'm believing it. And from that point on, it was, we're praying with everything we've got, every second we've got, I'm praying with you. And I just remember afterwards, you know, walking through the process right the day before everything kind of went down. So it must have been a Sunday, or it must have been Saturday, because you guys were planning on going in on Sunday. I remember it just walking in and having it be, obviously you guys were in a different place than you are now, because you were at the precipice of something's got to happen, right? And so for us, it was, I'm trying to make sure, like, I'm going to have all the faith that I can with about this. And I, like, in full faith, God's going to, like, God do something. But if he doesn't, where's our heart going to be? So it wasn't nursing mode. For me, I want to make sure your heart is protected, you know, that it wasn't vulnerable to what it ended up being vulnerable to. So I mean, I think that's what it was. It was trying to think past things and trying to help kind of figure those things out. But after it all, I feel like showing up at your house that the next time we came, I remember just, there was just a very heavy feeling of hopelessness in the room. And I remember the feeling of just being like truth needs to be spoken into the room. There needs to be hope. And so in my mind and in my heart, whatever was going on, whatever was being spoken about, my mind was praying and speaking as much scripture as God would pour into my heart, just out loud. Mm-hmm. and or praying in the spirit, and just trying to, whatever I could do to bring any kind of hope into the room through God. Like, that's basically what my heart was in that moment. What was going on for you inside?
As you're talking, I just am thinking how crazy it is that two people can perceive a situation so differently. And
like you just, and I?
Yeah, like you're talking and I'm like, funny, I got the opposite. But like, not funny, but kind of, because
we work together.
I feel like a big issue that a lot of Christians have is emotion-based faith. And so, like, just thinking your emotion was one thing, my emotion was different. If we took our perceptions as discernment, like, we could be riding on, like I said, emotion-based faith and making decisions based off that, thinking we're being discerning. So thankfully, I don't think we did that. But the whole time, there's so many complex things when your friends are going through a loss of a child, and to like try to understand that weight and also try not to insert how you would feel in that situation, because A, it's not about you, but B, you, it's insulting when people try to do that. Like when people are like, oh, you know, I don't know, not the, I can't imagine this, but almost like when people have told me that in hardship, I'm like, you really can't, like, you don't know. So when the information came, Rob told me like, hey, Jeremy sent me a text, something's wrong with the appointment. And I immediately texted you. I was like, hey, I'm worried, what's going on? And there was obviously a lot going on at the office. And so I knew like, this is very, very bad, and immediately fell to my knees and was praying. And a vivid memory of this happening with Levi entered my mind. And I remember you sending me a text, hey, I need prayer, because this with Levi, you were like, this isn't looking good and I need you to pray. And I just asked God, I said, don't do this. Please don't do this. And the same thing happened when Rob told me that something was wrong. I said, God, please don't do this, because we already had the miracle. And it's so hard, like, when you know it's not him who's doing it, but you know it's him who has the power to stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have no power. And to really allow yourself to let that sink in can be so defeating. To know that no matter what I do, no matter how I can be there for my friend, it's not going to stop his will from playing out. And I think that's another thing that all of us struggle with, all humans with faith, is we write God's will into our own.
Yeah.
And like we can come up with like all the beautiful things that would happen if he performed the miracle like you guys were talking about. And I prayed those things in your room. I prayed, God, save people through this. Don't just save hope. Save the people that see this miracle. And I don't think that those prayers are wrong. I don't think that's misplaced faith. But when the outcome is not what you want, then your faith has to stand where it was. And like, it shows your true colors as friends, to be able to be like, God's still good even through this, and to be able to be some form of rock for people going through a time where their life is just shaken. I'm not going to lie, it's hard. And it's like, in this specific situation, everyone knew that like Rob and I were there for you, and as much as we felt was appropriate. So like, trying to protect you from all the messages and the calls. And like, I cannot imagine how many you guys got to begin with, but just like getting like the trickling ones, the people who like had the forethought to be like, maybe now's not an appropriate time to reach out to them. That was overwhelming as well. And so like, I told Rob, like at one point I don't remember when it was, but I was like, I feel like I need to talk about this, because like, it sounds silly, but when there's just a constant receiving of information, and it just feels like your body can't hold it anymore. So eventually, I'm a bottler. Like I'm an inward processor. I don't talk about things. So I think eventually I told Rob, and I just was like, I've flooded. Like it was just a lot. So that's like the way that I've processed it. But looking at you two, knowing that you guys have come out of a really hard year to begin with, and then to be hit with this, and you talk about it as though it's been a long time, and it's only been a month, a little over a month since Hope's birth, that like you speak as though you should be out of the grieving period. And to me, I don't believe that you should be, like, not that there's a should or shouldn't, but I don't believe that you need to think that you have to be. And I do believe that both of you speak with such level-headedness and wisdom and self-awareness to be like, this was our faith before, this was our faith during, and here's where we are, where our faith is now. Mm-hmm. To be able to recognize those things is so important, because you have to look in the mirror, and you're doing that so beautifully. I think a lot of people will benefit from knowing, like, this is what faith is actually like when it's shaken, when there's a quake. And you just need that little bit for God to work in you.
There was somebody from the church that had blessed us with a gift. And she'd given it to us a few weeks ago. And it's just been sitting on my nightstand, and there was, I had many chances, but I never had the emotional capability to pick up a book about it. But it was just about loss. And sure enough, I picked it up last week during Holy Week, and it was all in parallel to that. And I think it wasn't a coincidence. I think God was using that book and that person to help restore a lot of the faith that I thought I just shot away. But it's opened my eyes to see the bigger perspective on things and not just keep my mentality in a little bubble. Because, you know, once your faith is tested in those things, God will use his people and people outside that you don't even know to help you. And he uses the body that way and all of the people he's created in that way to help you through those moments. And I think that a lot of what the book is, I haven't even finished it. I'm like, I just started it because I haven't been able to really read it as much, but it has helped a lot. And I think knowing that and talking to people that have walked through this, and that are on the other side of it too, has helped, you know. And I think those are little parts of this journey that we're on that I'm incredibly grateful for, is the people and just God's truth in it. Like, you know, I keep going back to verses about, like, why do we suffer, and like, why is suffering allowed? And I think about Paul, and I think about all the people, you know, in the Bible that God has used and has, you know, they are models for us in how we process grief and how we go through grief. And, you know, I have to go back and read those things to know, like, okay, God, I can get through this. I think of Job. I've been reading Job, and I'm just like, you know, God does permit those things to happen, but I think it's because he wants to see a faith so much stronger in us, and to know and to dive deeper into who he is. Because I know there's a lot of people that they don't mean to say it in a negative way, but they try and comfort you with their words, saying it's the enemy's work, you know. And I'm just like, you know, that's not my God. My God is a powerful God, and the enemy doesn't have power like that. You know, he is an enemy that likes to kill, steal, and destroy. But essentially, God does permit these things to happen, yes, but he is a God of power. Our enemy is not like that. And, you know, sometimes we hear those things and we give, you know, the enemy the credit for that. But I know that they're just meaning it in all the sense, but God is sovereign, and he sees things and he knows what we can do, and he'll give things to us that we can't even handle, you know? And like, and that's the point. We're supposed to go to him so he can get us through those things.
Mm. I don't think that's good advice to give people.
No.
And I don't think it's a good... I get the mindset, but I don't think we should shield people from the consequence of sin and the consequence of the world we're in, and the reality of the choice mankind continuously makes. Mm-hmm. That something like this happens. I think to say that, oh, it's just that dang enemy again for everything, is like, no, this is sin, and this is the world we're in. This is the imperfect thing that we've let ourselves into. And these things are happening to remind us, just like it's reminding people who aren't even Christians, This isn't supposed to happen.
This isn't supposed to be
isn't what God's design is. And it's a reminder, like, whatever you think you're seeking here, just remember, it's not here.
Right.
And so for something like this to happen, it's a brutal reminder that whatever you think is here, it's not here. It's in eternity with me. You can't take comfort
in that. But what he pulls out of your heart through the grief and the pain is a different revelation of who he is.
Absolutely.
That's 100%. So much deeper.
But I think you'd lose that by just blaming the enemy and being angry at the enemy.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a there's a level of realizing that this happens because of the state of the world that we're in.
Right.
And so even like you'd said, like that's a C.S.
Lewis-ism,
right? Of like, you can go all over the world. Why do so many humans all agree that this isn't right?
Mm-hmm.
It's because we all know, because we were all created.
We're created by God's image.
We all know that this isn't the design. It's just in us. We have a memory ingrained in our soul of what eternity should be. Mm-hmm. And whether you know him or not, you have that still.
Yeah.
And even Jesus went through deep grief, yeah, right? And you brought up C.S. Lewis, and there was obviously Aslan is the Jesus character in the book, he's the son of the king across the sea or whatever. And there is a moment in it in the book recently. I was reading it to my kids, and this is the magician's nephew. There's the little boy Diggory, he does something terrible. He wakes up. I know I cracked. You're looking at me and you're smiling.
I'm not looking at you.
No, it was Jeremy.
Because she looked at me. Continue.
But Diggory did something terrible. He, you know, pushed his friend out of the way. He rang a bell and brought evil basically into Aslan's fresh, brand new world. He, Diggory's got a mom back in his own world who's sick and dying. All he knows is that he's got to go ask the lion for something to cure his mom, but he knows he did something wrong. Mm. He knows he did something real wrong. And Aslan's like, he's every time he has an interaction with this little boy, he's like, he's talking about the wrong thing that he did to his other friends. And then, so Diggory finally, he's the little boy, gets the courage to kind of come up to the lion and basically be like, I'm here, and you know, but is there anything that you can do to save my mom? I really need, my mom is sick and dying. Is there anything you can do? And he's looking down at his feet, and he's expecting the lion to be angry and to be upset that he brought evil into his fresh, brand new world. And Diggory looks up into the lion's face, and these giant tears are in the lion's eyes, and he looks down at Diggory, and he says something like, "Oh my boy, like, you know grief. You and I are the only ones in this world to know what grief is like this." And it's just such a beautiful picture of the love of Jesus, because he knows grief, and he knows it well. He didn't want to go through with what he did on the cross. That's not what he wanted to do, except that it was obedience, that it was his Father's will, and he trusted. I just get that picture of Jesus in the garden, crying and asking God, and like even his friends deserted him and all that kind of stuff. Like, hey, pray with me, and come to the garden and pray with me. And they fell asleep, and nobody, who was alone, completely forsaken by himself. And the answer from God was, this is what you've got to go through.
Right.
And he went through it, and he's with us through that. Right. Yeah. And there's even that Psalm, the, my God, why have you forsaken me? He references that's a Psalm that basically brings you back to the point where you realize this is a Psalm that so many different people have prayed throughout thousands of years. And Jesus was praying it at that moment. So almost as if his grief and a lot, everybody before him and everybody after him that's prayed it, that Jesus has also prayed this prayer, my God, why have you forsaken me?
Yeah.
And there's hope at the end of that psalm where it's, I will praise your name in the congregation. Like, I will praise your name with the people, and I can't wait to be in the congregation of people to worship you and praise you. And it's there's something so comforting to know that God knows our grief.
Absolutely.
I think so.
I think that's the one thing I've been just reminding myself consistently is like, Jesus has walked through this. He knows. He knows what grief is. He knows the struggles we're facing. He's been through it all. He's questioned, you know, all of his disciples questioned. And I think those things is where you can kind of give yourself grace in that that area. But right now it's like, you know, I really have to rebuild my trust and hope. Like, and it's taking time and it will take more time. I know it will. As you said, Marie, I can't rush into this stuff. And I'm like, again, every day is very unpredictable, but I know that trust and that hope will be rebuilt. And it's just going to take time and a lot of prayer and a lot of understanding, but to really just find my place in his scripture and his word. And like, it's interesting because, like, you know, you can read all the books, you can listen to all the podcasts, and you can worship all of the music out there, but really what finds me the most comfort is just going into the word. And like, it sounds kind of morbid, but listen, like reading the things that are brokenhearted and meditating on things that, you know, reading about people that have suffered and like understanding it to a level because it's relatable right now. And I think those things have been really helping me. And obviously everybody else that has like really helped, but
yeah,
one day at a time for sure.
I think a couple things faith wise, just as I think through, and we should probably end it soon. We're getting close to an hour, but a couple of things faith wise that's gone on for us is I think we were really frustrated with kind of the way the spoiled brat faith that it feels like we had, but that just our American culture can have.
And I don't think we've ever admitted to it. I don't think we've ever wanted to believe that we've had this
faith
because I don't think we thought we did. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think.
But I think it's, sorry, go ahead.
No, I call it spoiled brat because it's like, it's annoying to me that we had it sneak in, but even just the idea of like when we wanted this miracle of, you know, we had seen the hemorrhaging, we had prayed and it had passed. Realistically, that could have just been the hemorrhage passing, which is still great that that happened. The problem then we started to write the journey that God must be writing right now. And I think I see this so much. And I think we see it sneak in the words of faith, the prosperity gospel, but it gets in other places too.
Yeah.
To where we start to write the story that God is writing.
Yep.
Oh, we had this child conceived after our marriage was healed. We saw this healing. This is gonna come from this child, like all these different things. And you start writing.
You create a story,
you create a narrative.
Yeah.
But that narrative, a lot of the times, and I think the part that's hard is like, I want people who did this with us to hear it and to stop doing it. The narrative changes to, it's all about you. God has reorchestrated everything for me. So I have a great life here. And you start to get this spoiled brat idea of this is why he's doing it. But God works all things for his glory, for his good, for the kingdom. He builds through the kingdom. And the story is whatever the heck we're walking through on earth, we're walking through with our eyes fixed on the promise, the singular promise that Jesus gave. And it's in eternity, in a life that doesn't have this. And I just want us to realize that, like, that's the faith you hold on to. And if things are awful here, it's because we're supposed to keep walking with him in mind.
Yeah.
And I think it just hit me hard listening to Josh Garrels has a version of Turn Your Eyes, Fix Your Eyes Upon Jesus, Look Full in His Wonderful Face, and the things of this world grow strangely dim, yeah, and in the light of His glory and grace. And you hear those lyrics and you think about that song and you're like, as you walk through whatever the heck you're going to walk through, because it's going to be rough, you cannot start to rewrite the narrative, mm-hmm, even in the miracles.
Yeah.
And I think I just want us to stop writing these narratives. Oh, God ordained this so this could happen, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm trying not to be specific, so. But I think there are specifics of multiple people. I'm not talking, yep, about any one person, but I think if you hear this and you think I'm talking about you, like, it's something we all need to work on. Mm-hmm. We cannot write these narratives. Whatever is happening, it's to reveal the kingdom to either us or to people around us, and it's to help us walk through in a deeper faith of what He's doing. I think we have a bigger grasp on eternity than we ever have because we're forced to reconcile it, because we had to hold our stillborn baby, and we had to think through what happens now that this body is lifeless. And you have to wrestle through that, and you have to work through it. And so now we're getting this deeper understanding. And it's like when you come back from a missions trip and realize, like, man, everything I was worrying about all the time is so useless in comparison to just the idea of the eternity that He's promised. And why the heck do we need to keep saying He's promising us more in our marriage, He's promising us more in our finances, He's promising us more in whatever we're walking through? Like, who cares? He's promising us that as we walk in our life focused on Him, that we have that promise. We don't need anything else.
No.
And it's a spoiled brat faith to think that you need more promises than that.
Mm. I think that's something that, like, that alone is enough. You know, that is a gift in and of itself. That's what I was saying earlier. Like, you know, Jesus suffered for us, and, like, He's given us eternity. That alone is the biggest gift we could ever get.
Absolutely.
And we can quickly lose sight of it when all of our world is crumbling down around us. And we can just throw that out the window and think of our lives in the current state. But we don't see the bigger picture. We don't, because we get lost in our grief and in our hardships. But it is so incredibly true, is that, like, when we can all be together, like, in eternity with, like, beauty and glory, like, that itself is going to be such a glorious day, you know? I don't know what else you want to talk about, but
yeah, I think that's the end of it. But yeah, that's,
thank you guys for talking about this. I know it's going to help other people, even just the walking alongside other people, you know, through things like this. So thank you guys for being open. And willing to have this conversation, because it's going to mean a lot to other people too.
And if there's anybody that is going through a grief, anything along the lines of pregnancy loss, like, you got to talk to someone. You can't do this alone, and find people that can help you through this stuff. I mean, like, walking through this multiple times, and it's just, I mean, Marie, you've experienced it. It is not something you can do alone, because you're going to find yourself in a really dark place. So seek people that have walked through it, and talk to somebody and feel everything you're feeling, because everything is validated, and it's okay to feel those things, but don't get stuck. Because that's, like, that is the hardest place, is when you're stuck. You start growing numb to life, and you don't want to take a day for granted, because it is not promised tomorrow, but eternity is. And that is where our perspective is light, is stays. So
absolutely. I think the last thing, just to talk through, of where are we at in the belief of miracles and the belief of healing. I think we work through not being, you know, we work through what do we see within the natural and what do we see within now? And as we have been learning more about this miscarriage, because we got some test results and started analyzing, you know, at this point, it's been hard. We've had more miscarriages than we have children. And I know that's the case for a lot of people. But I think for us, we've realized that it's been the same issue for each miscarriage that we've had. And to come to the realization that most likely because of the state of sin in this world and how sin has affected our own flesh and our bodies, potentially we were never even supposed to have kids. Our bodies were never even able to do it. But by the miracle of God and the grace of God, that we got two beautiful children from it. Because we see that the same thing happens on these miscarriages. It's the same type of issue. And so we hold true to the fact that, like, we have two miracles that are being raised. And,
you know, and even speaking on that, like, even if, I mean, we don't really have answers, quite honestly, we don't. We have an idea. But even if we knew or even if we didn't, regardless of the matter, life is a miracle. And we need to value that and we need to look at that and to acknowledge that and realize we are not in control of everything we do. And I think a lot of people like to believe that we can be in control of our lives, our children's lives, people are, like whatever it is, we are not God ultimately. And we have to respect that and know He's sovereign and we have to come humbly and know that whatever it is, it's for His good and it's for His glory. And we have to work through all of those parts and understand that, again, like life is something that is given and it is taken and we are not the ones to be in control of that.
Yeah.
I think something that just you guys were talking just reminded me, because you're such big influences in hundreds of lives and hundreds of families, some people have posed the question, like, does God even perform miracles? Like, why would He not do this for people, like you said, Haley, who serve Him with everything and serve Him like with humble hearts and with gratitude, and they love it. And, you know, like as your best friend and as somebody who loves you more than these people who are asking, it's such a complex question to answer where, like, if I was far removed from it, it would be like, because He's God, like, duh. But something I had to wrestle through, like, you know, I don't know why God didn't perform this miracle, and I know I won't be able to figure out that answer. But yes, God does perform miracles. Like, we don't know why He chooses when he does perform miracles. But something that helped me was listening to one of my favorite theologians. Her name's Felicia Mazenheimer. She was speaking about, I believe, the prosperity gospel, but just like how it infiltrates so many beliefs, and that includes healing, where like if you believe hard enough and if you have enough people prophesying over your life, then it will happen. And the simple truth that she said was Jesus did not heal everyone in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
When He was walking this earth, there were still sick people, there were still dying people, there was still leprosy. And so Jesus in His incarnate did not perform every miracle available.
Yeah.
And so we don't know why the ones in scripture are the ones that happened. And we don't know why the ones that we see are the ones that happen. And the ones that we don't see are the ones that don't happen. But there's beauty in all of it. Mm-hmm. It just depends on really how far you zoom out. And that's what's so hard. Like, that's what we have to ask the Lord for. Give me eyes to zoom out. Like, give me eyes to see how this is impacting your kingdom in a glorifying way.
I think even in scripture, and I could be wrong, but there is a story of somebody that didn't even get a miracle. And God, and Jesus was essentially saying, like, this isn't your time. Like, it's, and He changed the perspective to eternity in that point too. Am I wrong there? I thought there was a story.
It's reminding me of The Chosen.
Oh yeah, that is in The Chosen. it's a dang chosen.
Is that an add-on in there from that? They, I thought his name was John, but I totally
Little James.
It was Little James. They added that to address this belief of why does things not happen for everyone. So they added that he was crippled. They added that story. So Jesus.
Oh, that was one of his disciples?
Yeah. And so the tension was.
If you're listening to this.
Sorry, it's a totally, this, yeah.
No, I was going to apologize to the really famous guy. Like, hey, if you're listening to this, we knew you were a disciple.
What?
I'm but so obviously sorry, he's not little listening. James. Sorry, little James. But obviously he's not listening.
What? You know, that obscure guy. And
but essentially the point is, like, not all miracles were recorded, and there was probably a lot that weren't performed. But like you said, like, we don't have the full understanding, but regardless of the matter, like, the miracles he does perform, those are the ones that we should still hold faith onto. Like, we should still, like, it helps us see things too in a completely different light when we see God do things like we've seen in our church, like, and not to lose sight of those things and to still have hope in them, because it's revelation that we won't understand, but it's what God is doing. And yeah,
and if there's something that doesn't change throughout all the stuff that we do that goes on down here, is that God is good, and that even when we don't see the purpose, we don't see why or what, there is possibly a reason, you know, that we might not know here on this side of earth, on the side of heaven. And so, I mean, I think you touched on it before, Jay. You mentioned that, you know, we live this life and we all make our own narratives and all that kind of stuff. But so what do we do when the narrative doesn't go our way, or when things are wrong and bad things happen? And, or what do we believe about miracles and all of that? But basically the idea is you keep it simple, right? Like, you spend your time, you live every day for what it is. I'm going to spend my time putting God's truth in my heart. Yeah. I'm going to check my heart when I'm in the things that I do. I'm going to make sure that my heart's not selfish, not bitter, not jealous, not prideful in any way. Like, check your heart, and like, this is an everyday thing. But live your life in a place of where your heart is pure as best as you can. You know, follow after Him, keep your eyes on Him, and that's it. And then if miracles occur, if miracles happen, because, you know, whether or not you're doing those things, but like, miracles are going to happen around you. They could happen to you, and miracles don't always look the same. Miracles don't have to look like healing. They can look like, they can look like, you said, peace, joy, patience. The fact that God is changing the sinful person that I am into something that images Him better is a miracle.
Yeah.
And so, to, like you said before, you need to look at even the littlest things and realize that we are miracles. The fact that we're living the lives that we are right now is a miracle.
Look at this, the world. Like, you zoom out and you see our world in the universe. How are we alive? You know, like, you think about those things, and it's like, even scientists can't put a finger on it. It doesn't make sense. Everything perfectly aligns in this. It's just like, no, that is God.
And yet He, like, still has a purpose for even
the like, little things. All of us. Yeah, and like, that was one huge shift in my mindset too, Rob, was like, zooming out and seeing the world outside my bubble. And it's humbling.
Yeah.
You know, and we have to realize that it's not just about us. You know, and sometimes we can get trapped in that, and that's okay when you're dealing with a lot of horrible things. But yeah, it all points to God. Yeah. It does. And
I think through this story in scripture, in what you were talking through, Marie, just made me think of it, of like, well, why would this happen? Why can't He change it? You know, do it all. Like, He's got to heal everyone, got to do everything. And I don't know why, it just made me think through this scripture of the woman pouring out the perfume on Jesus and Him being like, what a waste. What are you doing? This could have fed all these people, all these miracles could have happened. It could have been perfect. And Jesus being like, there's going to be poor and sick among you for your entire time here. But hold on to me while you have me. And to realize, like, if everyone on earth was healed right now, it wouldn't bring everyone to him. It wouldn't. And so for the rest of our lives here, our children will get sick. They'll get better. Prayerfully, they'll get better and we can take care of them. We're going to get sick. We're going to break bones. We're going to have all these things.
Puke like a cat.
We're going to puke like a cat.
Full circle, baby.
Full circle. But we're going to cling on to Jesus while we have him.
Yeah.
To get us through this walk. And I think that's the piece that's like, of course he's not going to heal every single time because this will always be here until he comes again.
Yeah.
So let's just hang on to him as best we can. Mm. And we're going to have to, two-part this. We're going to close it even though we have more to say.
I had one more
thing. All right, say one more thing. Never mind.
Buckle back up.
No, I just was saying with that mindset though, you can quickly get trapped into anxiety and fear of your kids and your life. And like, I was there, like I was nervous. I thought, okay, I'm losing this child. I'm going to lose my other kids. I'm going to lose Jeremy. Like I went down this horrible place, but there's that verse and I had to meditate on it. Do not worry about the things of tomorrow. Today brings enough worries as it is. And that is how we're going to live life right now. And I say that to anybody walking through struggles is just to take it day by day and really just do not stress about the future. Like, don't cast anxieties on that. It is not necessary because that is not a fun place to be in. That's for sure.
Anxiety is the devil's playground.
Mm. Yeah.
Thanks, Gramps.
Young whippersnapper.
Music's playing. We're out now.
Feel free to cut.